Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. The strained relationship between citizens and the police have been front and center this past year. One of the duties of law enforcement is to protect the community. But several high-profile shootings of unarmed people across the country have people asking, are the police really keeping us safe? Do you worry about calling the police in your area? Would you like to see an improved relationship with the police in your community? Tell us about it right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native organizers against a mine proposal in northern Wisconsin are looking to maple syrup as an economic alternative. As WXPR's Natalie Jablonski reports, the Lakota Ray Harvest Education and Learning Project is hoping to launch a commercial maple syrup operation near the proposed mine site.
The Harvest Camp, also called the Help Village, began almost 2 years ago in protest of an iron mine proposal in the Pinoki Range. Spokesperson Paul Demain says syrup production is a more sustainable alternative to open pit mining.
The tapping industry, just not maples, we're talking about potential yellow and white birch. There are other trees that are tappable as well, is that we'd like to try to look at revitalizing that industry.
Demain says organizers are planning two separate syrup operations, one for non-commercial purposes and another that works toward food-grade certification.
So what we'll be doing is using food-grade containers. We'll be using food-grade transportation systems, galvanized steel and everything, so that if we do achieve that, we can sell to a wholesaler or resell it on the commercial market.
Volunteers are holding a tree-tapping ceremony this weekend in the Pinoki Range. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski.
The National Congress of American Indians held its winter session in Washington, D.C. this week. Tribal leaders discussed topics ranging from education to transportation. Matt Laszlo has the story.
Morning commuters slogged through fresh snow in the nation's capital this week, while tribal leaders and other attendees at the National Congress of American Indians were pouring piping hot coffee and grubbing down on breakfast pastries. Conference rooms were reserved for topics like small business administration, health care, education, and even tribal marijuana policy. Chet Brooks is chief of the Delaware Tribe of Indians in Oklahoma. He says his biggest issue when talking with federal officials remains health care.
We've got particular problems in Native American society, such as diabetes and alcoholism, certain times that we need all the health care assistance we can get.
When it comes to advancing the interests of Indian country in 21st century America, tribal leaders say they need to remain vigilant and unified. They report being unified while meeting with lawmakers on Capitol Hill this week. It's their best chance to ensure the federal government pays attention to their needs. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Roughly 100 people took part in a peaceful march Thursday against racism in Rapid City, South Dakota. Protesters expressed anger over what they see as unfair treatment of Native people in the justice system and unfair economic conditions. Marchers included 77-year-old Dennis Banks, a founding member of the American Indian Movement. Banks says he's come back to Rapid City too often over the years to join in protests like this.
This is probably about my 10th time I've had to come and march in Rapid City against racism. Of course, there's not everybody in Rapid City is racist. We know that. But there's no voice from the state officials, state legislators, senators that say nothing against racism. Then it gives license to those people who to commit acts of violence.
A series of public meetings and events are planned in the coming weeks, all aimed at addressing racism. Seattle news agencies report Native American murals in the city vandalized with paint have been cleaned up. The murals at a school honor Native leaders like Chief Joseph and Chief Seattle. This week, a group of volunteers reportedly scrubbed the portraits as police investigate the incident. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians with this message for American Indians 50 and over. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. We're talking about a relationship with the police today. Have you ever thought twice before you called the police in your area? Was it because you were afraid? This past summer, all eyes were on Ferguson, Missouri, as protests erupted after the shooting of an unarmed African-American man by the police. Things erupted again when the verdict on the case was issued this fall. And during these heated times, the social media hashtag Black Lives Matter really picked up speed, and it's still causing people to dialogue. The events of the past year have a lot of people looking into the relationship between communities of color and law enforcement. Are you one of them? In Native America, we're also giving our own having our own conversations about the police. And the phrase Native Lives Matter is also ringing through social media among Natives. Right now, many are still talking about the fatal shooting of a Lakota man named Alan Locke, who was shot by a Rapid City police officer in December of 2014, soon after he attended a rally to bring awareness about the tension between Native communities and law enforcement. So what does all of this mean? Well, That's what we want you to tell us about today. We want to know why we have heated tensions with communities of color and the law enforcement. And how have our communities reacted when someone from our race, maybe even our neighborhood, is assaulted or even killed in a law enforcement situation? And why do you think things are tense? And what can be done to ease the tension? What about making community safer? Tell us about it. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Also, if you're hearing this and are thinking our community's relationship with the police is good, and perhaps you feel your community is safe because of the law enforcement, tell us about that too. Maybe you even have a story about the police getting it right in your community. We want to hear all opinions today. The number to share your thoughts is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and bring in our first guest. We have Eileen from Tucson, Arizona. And Eileen Luna Firebaugh is an associate professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Arizona. And Eileen is Choctaw and Cherokee. Welcome, Eileen.
Thank you.
And Eileen, thank you for joining us here today. And just kind of based on that small journey that we just went through in our introduction, what are you thinking right now?
Well, I guess the frustrating thing for me is, having worked in this field since the mid-70s, is that it doesn't really improve markedly from time to time. We have the same issues related to the police and general law enforcement with the communities, be they Native or be they minority. We have the same issues that arise. We have the same lack of engagement by the administration in fixing it. We have the same thing said, well, it's training, it's this and that, but, you know, if that were true, it would be fixed. And so there's a level of frustration when you work in this field that just makes you, you know, have to be committed over a number of years, and in my case, 30 or 40, to trying to raise the consciousness of the administration and the community to what can be done to fix and make accountable the policing in the area.
All right. And Eileen, you know, it makes me think of a lot of stuff. I've been watching, you know, some of this, not only through social media, but, you know, it falls into either our nightly or morning newscast. And I'm sure there are people out there who have a lot to say about this. That's why we schedule this program. We know that this is an issue that seems to keep growing legs. What do you think about that? Or are we victims of sensationalism from the media? I want to hear about that, too. What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. And Eileen, you come from a law enforcement family, even down to your clan, and you've spent many years working in law enforcement. Have you ever been afraid to call the cops?
No, but I get really aggressive. I have seen so many incidents that I've come to believe that the only way to deal with it is be very assertive.
And what does that mean?
That means, for example, in my own instance, in one instance where the police were telling me I had to leave the scene, I couldn't witness them abusing a homeless person, that I said, well, and given that I was the director of the review board that dealt with police misconduct, I said, well, you know, that would be very interesting. Why don't you just give that a try? And I think they figured out, oh, maybe just because they didn't recognize me, maybe there was an issue there, so they backed off. But an awful lot of it is just demanding them to adhere to their rules and not backing down.
All right. Thank you for that. And Eileen, I want to remind our listening audience, we are also inviting you to join us today. Today, we are talking about our relationship with law enforcement in our area, maybe even something you've been witnessing nationally. What do you think needs to be said? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Eileen, you know, when we do talk about this, why do you think other people might, think twice about calling the police when something's going down?
Well, the police are the arm of the state, you know, to put it in that old language. And they have the power of control over so many of us. And so, of course, it's going to be scary. All you can do is basically try to take it off the street. I mean, if you've got an issue, you take it off the street and you take it into the police station. You talk to the command staff. You do the paperwork that it needs to bring a complaint. But what happens is a lot of young people particularly will see something they don't like and will confront the police on the street. And that always, generally, not always, but generally can create a problem for them. So part of it is strategically thinking about how to bring it forward, and they may not know that.
All right. And if anybody has any questions about this, you can call in too. You know, what do you do when you're in a situation? What are your rights? What do you know? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take our first caller. We have Mike in Buffalo Springs, New Mexico, tuned in on KGLP. Mike, welcome to the hour.
Good morning, Tara. Good subject here. I just wanted to comment about how with the ending of the Wounded Knee occupation in 73 and what happened in Rapid City in December in 73 after the occupation, we had an incident similar to Rapid City that took place in Gallup and police department there. They, after the shooting and the confrontation, they drugged the young man out like he was some trophy and just threw him on the sidewalk, you know. And they even had the picture up on the wall in their fraternal order office or whatever, where the police hang out and munch on donuts. But I just wanted to say how nothing has really changed, and I don't see any change in the future as to race relations and confrontations with the police or anyone else. You know, that's just my comment on the whole thing.
All right, Mike, thank you for your call. And, you know, all opinions are welcome. What are you feeling? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Eileen, we're going to bring in another voice. joining us now from Pine Ridge. On their community there in South Dakota is Lemoyne LaPointe. He's a coordinator for the Indigenizing Crisis Intervention Teams in Indian Country Initiative. And Lemoyne is Sichangu Lakota. Welcome to Native America Calling, Lemoyne.
Thank you.
And Lemoyne, anything you want to start us off with? I think we've opened up a space that a lot of people can relate to. Go ahead, Lemoyne.
Well, you know, just getting back to your question about, you know, why do these tensions exist? How do we ease these tensions? You know, and why are we afraid to call the police? And I think that a lot of that comes from the distrust that emerged over, you know, a couple hundred years with our, encounter with non-Native worldviews. And a lot of those worldviews that were foreign to us are the worldviews that want to impose their perspective on us. But we should also really look back upon the strengths of our own perspective, because we have centuries of perspective that really provide us a good model to really, and for lack of a better word, enforce. And these are all positive enforcements. So we have to take a look at what we did to become a successful nation of indigenous peoples and rely on the wisdom and knowledge of our ancestors to utilize that knowledge and wisdom today. And we have ways to do that.
All right. I'm glad you're bringing that up. And then also, Lemoyne, I know a lot of people have their focus, their attention focused on tensions that are going on in Rapid City. If there is something you'd like to share, you know, maybe you're seeing some of what we're talking about up close, you can call in, tell us about it. And we also want to know, you know, are there solutions? What can we do so that people feel safe, so that tensions aren't so high? Or have you lost hope? You don't think anything can be done? We want to hear from you. Share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take another caller. We have Anna in Reserve, New Mexico. She's tuned in on KUNM. Anna, what would you like to share?
Yes, hi. What a great program. What an amazing subject to bring up. I think it's just all over the world. Look at the world we're living in. I think the business of violence, it's the world we live in. I think there is, first of all, people are so exposed to violence from early age. That's one thing, and that's not stopping. The second thing I want to bring up is the business of law enforcement in this country. I've been incarcerated for completely ridiculous reasons, and at first hand, I understood the business of the law. And so that's the other thing. The treatment of the law against underprivileged people, since they're themselves underprivileged, they will have this, their psyche is to exploit and do violence to those who are under them, or who at some point, because of their power as officers, have over these people, be that whichever race, whichever. But most of the time, if you look at the cases, it's people who are underprivileged. Now, you tell me how many white-collar people are incarcerated and treated the way our natives are treated, the way our Latinos are treated in this country, the blacks, look what's happening. So there is, in my opinion, there is a business going on. It's unstoppable unless people start racing and fighting back this violence.
All right, Anna, I want to go back to Eileen. Eileen, Anna has presented a lot today. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Well, I absolutely agree that the one of the major problems is that the Native Americans and blacks and Latinos are not so much involved in policing as the non-natives, white people. And so what happens is that when you have an administration and you have a government that doesn't integrate Indian people into policing, then surprise, surprise, Indian perceptions are not reflected and our values are not supported and advanced. We saw this in Albuquerque when we did a study there, where although the rest of the minorities, for example, the African-American, were a very small percentage. They were a very high percentage of policing. But the American Indians, which were 20 to 30% of the population in Albuquerque, there were only two officers who were American Indians. And so we were left out of the discussion. We were left out of the control process. And that has to be enhanced. That has to work better. Part of that is our communities demanding to be part of the discussion, to be part of the command staff, and to be part of policing. And if we don't demand it, then we'll be left out. And then you're left out. Basically, people don't care what happens to you.
So we need to speak up more. Eileen, thanks for that. And I also want to let you know that we will be hearing from the perspective of someone who has been in law enforcement. We're going to hear about that, too. But this is also your space to tell us what you're thinking. Call us right now. We know there's a lot to be said. Don't wait till the end of the hour. Call us now. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and bring in David. He's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. David, what are you thinking?
Hello. I believe the topic today was why are people in the community afraid to call police.
Want to know about that. Go ahead.
My take on that is I think because some people might be hesitant to call the police because they have bad experience with them in the past. You know, whether it be they have past criminal history or they were mistreated or they weren't taken seriously. And I believe what could help, and I think police departments across the nation are trying to do a little, are trying to get the community more involved and show the community that they're not there to harass or harm or ridicule, but I believe they're trying to get that image of they're actually there to protect and serve and help people.
All right, David, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Again, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Tom now in Wounded Knee, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Tom, what would you like to share?
Well, first of all, I'd like to share it today, the 41st anniversary of Wounded Knee, 1973. We're doing the Four Direction Memorial Walk in the Wounded Knee. And I was a very young man in Wounded Knee, and that was one of the subjects that we stood up. Is a right to live as Lakota people and oppose law enforcement that really has a racial attitude towards Indian people. Law enforcement has more or less South Dakota to me has a dual standard of justice, one for the non-Indian and one for the Indian. Right now, the South Dakota State Penitentiary. I look at all the penitentiaries throughout the country as the largest growing reservations in the United States, where there's a high percentage of our people locked up in there. And most of them locked up because they're Indian. 2 weeks ago, 57 children from American Horse School, grade school age, won honor rolls, perfect attendance, and they were rewarded by taking them to a hockey game in Rapid City, South Dakota. During the hockey game, there was some drunk white men sitting in a booth above them, a VIP booth.
And Tom, we've been following this. We've also been reporting on it too. And that's some of the reason why we put the call out to folks in your area. We know there are many things going on. Tom, I also want to hear. You referenced something that is in the mind of a lot of people historically because this is an important date, a reminder of what's happened in the past. Tom, I want to hear from you, just somebody who has looked at probably this and thinking about tensions over the year. Do you think things have gotten worse? Are they the same? Or, what do you think, Tom?
Well, I don't really think, but I know that frontier mentality still very much exists in South Dakota. Our people, we carry the responsibility of our ancestors. White America needs to carry the responsibility of their ancestors the 7th Cavalry, similar to law enforcement today. We're racially good profiled. When you go to Rapid City to shop, any Indian activities where roadblocks are set up, and they're just roadblocks set up coming out of our tribal lands here.
All right, Tom, I want to go to Lemoyne with this one. Lemoyne, you know, you're connected to the area that Tom's talking about. Any words for Tom?
I lost your voice there a little bit. Could you repeat that question again, please, Tara?
Sure. Were you able to hear our caller, Tom?
Yes, I did.
Any words for him?
Well, I Tom's accurate on, you know, his perception of the problems that we encounter on a daily basis here. And, you know, listening to Tom and the others, you know, Anna and Dave, Mike, and their responses, you know, there's a, I think, a responsibility that we have as a community to be as proactive as possible. We should not wait for, you know, executive administration of this country or even the mayors and governors to respond. When we as Native people have a proactive responsibility to arrange these conversations, I'd rather use the word conversations rather than meetings, because one of the things that we're strong at as a Native community is taking a look at alternative futures and looking at possibilities and visions. Our people historically and culturally are strong at that. We're filled with those types of ceremonies as well. We need to rely in contemporary times on those various approaches. We just took a similar approach in Rapid City on February 25th. We had over 82 participants, white and Lakota participants, regarding the death of one of our young Lakota men there, and then two racial incidents at the Civic Center regarding Native youth. And we looked not at solving problems, but we looked at creating new alternative futures that don't currently exist. What do we need to do to make them happen? What's our responsibility as a community? So as part of the indigenizing CIT, which is Crisis Intervention Team Training in Indian Country, our responsibility is to invite the public safety sector, invite the mental health sector, invite all community advocates who are concerned about this issue. So we as a Native community and even as a broader community hold the responsibility for public safety in our hands. We should never allow a group of professionals to do that for us, but to work in collaboration, in partnership with us, the public safety sector, the mental health sector, and the community sector.
In Lemoyne, I wonder how many people out there are thinking, you know, right there with you, that this is the best way to talk about it. We got to go to break here. We will be back after this short break. But again, phone lines are open. If there's something you want to share, call us 1-800-99-NATIVE. Phone lines are open, and we'll be right back. These days, it seems everyone wants to firm up, sculpt their body, or build muscle. Personal trainers know these are good things. Health professionals often remind us that strong muscles are an important part of our overall health and fitness. Join us for the next Native America Calling as we talk about muscles, from workout routines and nutrition to maintenance and injuries.
Bye. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use pick, click, give, and select KNBA-FM, Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support provided by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide, May 4th through the 7th, 2015, at the Hotel Albuquerque at Old Town, bringing together tribes and the telecom and technology industries to pursue solutions that advance digital opportunities for American Indian and Alaska Native communities. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for joining our conversation today. We're glad to have you with us. And today we've been talking about law enforcement, and we want to hear from you. Many have been speaking about the police's relationship with our Native communities, particularly where cities where there are high Native populations. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848, and give us a view into your community with your calls. Do you see an issue with the police in your community? And what do you think about improving that relationship? Or do you get along with the police in your area and things are just fine and you want to share about the job they're doing? You can call in to 1-800-996-2848. On the line with us today from Tucson, Arizona, is Eileen Luna Feuerbaugh, and she is an associate professor of American Indian Studies at the University of Arizona. And Eileen is Choctaw and Cherokee. Also with us today, we have Lemoyne Lapointe. He is a coordinator for the Indigenizing Crisis Interventions Intervention Teams in Indian Country Initiative. And Lemoyne is Shichangu Lakota. I want to welcome both of them back. And Lemoyne, you know, before the break, you were talking about the conversation that happened this week, I guess, and having those important conversations among the community with different people involved. Lemoyne, when it comes to being able to connect communities to voice opinions, you know, what's the most important thing when you're bringing that many people together?
I think one of the important things is hospitality, to really look, first of all, at how hospitable and impeccable our people's hospitality was toward each other. And when the participants arrived at our gathering on February 25th, that was our first impression. So when they come in, we invite them in. We sit them down. But the second most important thing as well is how you conduct, how you facilitate that particular event. And it has to be a participatory type of leadership where everybody has an equal say, where no one stands on the soapbox, but everybody is able to rotate through tables, you know, 4 to 5 people per table, and have opportunities to discuss structured questions and to answer those. When they answered them, they put them on chart paper. We probably had about 60 pieces of chart paper filled with responses to those particular questions, all asked in an affirmative way about alternative future, about possibilities. You know, those types of approaches are not necessarily about problem solving, even though problem solving is important. They're about breakthrough thinking, about looking at possibilities that we each carry proactively. And that's the way that we approached that particular event.
All right. Thanks for that, Lemoyne. And if you went to that event and you have something to say, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Eileen, I wanted to go back to something our caller said before the break, just kind of connecting also incarceration rates. What about just Native views on the system? You know, if we are these high incarceration rates, we're subject to different laws because of our tribal status. You know, how does that play into all of this? Or do you think it even does? Go ahead, Eileen.
Well, I think it does. I mean, to some extent, I have done a lot of, you know, I grew up urban. And so when I decided to come teach, I wanted to work in urban Indian communities because that's who I was. And so I started my research in Duluth and in Portland and in Tucson and in Albuquerque. And what I found across the board is that Indian people feel left out of what's going on. They just feel victimized by the police. And so you start thinking about how to make it better, how to improve the situation, and I really appreciated what the previous speaker said about indigenizing the process. You have to have listening conferences. You have to talk to people and get their information and not just tell people what to do, because telling people what to do is something that's been our experience, you know, since colonization. And so we tried to, and I had a number of young graduate students with me who were Native, and we tried to listen to what people were saying and to try to come up with ideas. I grew up in a family that was tribal law enforcement, had been tribal judges and tribal law enforcement back to the dawn of history, as far as anybody knew. And so we were used to talking about it at the dining room table. And so we tried about, okay, we'll create that environment and see what people have to say. Generally, they were very unhappy with the law enforcement they have, and they feel that nobody was listening to them, and that the first thing that would happen is law enforcement would come in and literally beat people up. I mean, you know, literally attack them, you know, move them out of their homes, and that it wasn't a conducive, you know, wasn't conducive to being able to express your issues or express your ideas. So we started looking at, how does the system work? Can it work in a better way for the, you know, Native people who are members of that community? And what can we do to make it, you know, what can the communities do to make it better? And what could we help with? But it's a long process, and it's something that's gone on, in my case, for, you know, 40 years, and certainly as a professor for the last 25 in terms of looking at it academically. And but American Indians don't feel that, you know, the police listen to them. They feel that police care more about what whites have to say than what Indians have to say. Even if there's a high population of Indians in the community, they aren't listened to, they aren't involved in listening conferences, they aren't invited to be part of the process. And so they're generally very unsatisfied with the policing they get and with the way that they're dealt with by the community.
All right. And we've heard some of that on the show today. Eileen, thanks for sharing. And what do you think? You know, are some of these listening conferences or meetings that are going on, maybe even some of the programs to improve relationships with the police, you know, what kind of effect are they having if they're happening in your community? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We want to hear from you today. And let's go ahead and bring in our final guest. Joining us from Parkland, Florida, is Ed Reyna, and he is a retired police chief. And Ed is Akmel Atham from Salt River. Welcome to Native America Calling, Ed.
Well, good afternoon, everybody.
Great to have you with us, Ed. Go ahead and jump in there. What do you think about what we've shared so far?
Well, it's all very informative, and it keeps on track, particularly what Lemoyne mentioned on pulling together the various social service providers. But I want to add to that, within public safety or law enforcement, and this is certainly my philosophy, is law enforcement must take the lead in pulling people together. Now, I've always done that everywhere I've worked, and I've worked for 5 different tribal governments, including a Tonawatam Nation in my last position. But what can tribal police do to, you know, educate our neighboring police agencies? I've done a lot of that. I've worked in Reno Sparks, which is right in the city of Reno. I've worked in Yavapai Prescott, which is in the city of Prescott. Tonawatam Nation certainly isn't, but they do have a district, in the Santa Vera district, which is within the city of Tucson. So what can law enforcement do, or travel police do is outreach to these agencies, educate them about tribal police, how tribal police work, and more importantly, the culture and various laws that tribes work under. A lot of people are surprised on the laws and the jurisdictional maze that we have to operate under, because I started that initially because we had our problems with our neighboring agencies, where they were hesitant to even work with us because they didn't understand where we were, why we did things we did, why we kept a non-tribal citizen that came to onto our rest, why we couldn't turn them back over to them. They thought we were just protecting all the native people, you know, our violators. But there were laws that they had to follow, depending on the tribal law and certainly federal laws that we had to comply with. So that's an example, but we can't of what we did to educate, but I realized then that they needed more education about our citizens, because in each of these areas, citizens were complaining about the brutality and, you know, the racial profiling they were receiving from our neighboring non-native agencies. So we included that as part of our education to our neighboring agency. So that education can be in service. More often it is. But like in Arizona, we put together, I believe it was a two-hour video presentation, all the tribal police chiefs in Arizona that presented to all the law enforcement agencies in Arizona, the non-Indians, just addressing the culture, the laws, and why tribal police and even citizens act the way they do.
And, you know, when we think about it that way, I'm also wondering, you know, when a community is, you know, goes through some of this education, especially hearing about Native culture, how does that change things? I want to hear from you, Native America. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Ed, we got a call we are going to weave in. Let's go ahead and bring in Daryl in Holy Cross, Alaska, tuned in on KSKO. Daryl, what would you like to share with us?
Thank you for taking my call, Tara. I was in law enforcement in 72, and I happened to be in a room with a bunch of state troopers, and a state trooper came in, said there was a shooting out in one of the villages, and they had a 2-4, is what they called it. One of the natives was dead, and they get to go arrest the other native. So they got a 2-4. That was just my comment. And the state troopers actually encourage Native people to use violence against other Native people to, you know, you have a right to defend yourself, is the comment I heard from them, too.
All right. Daryl, hold tight. I want to hear what Ed has to say to that. Go ahead, Ed.
You know, Alaska is unique in, as far as the jurisdictional issues, but that's probably an example of how the neighboring agencies through, you know, the surrounding agencies around Indian country are. You know, and I've certainly been discriminated against even in my 40 plus years in law enforcement, and just being in another citizen, they look at my credentials and, oh, okay, what's tribal police? So it takes a lot of education. And I've seen it better. I think things are better in Arizona. Alaska is certainly one of the things that's just crying out for a lot of reform. You know, the way it's, the jurisdiction is there, and the violence against the Native people, it's just, things just need to change. And it's going to, you know, we shouldn't wait for them to invite us in. We should outreach and go to them and demand that we be part of a review board, or we be part of a symposium, whatever they're working on. Keep an eye out for it and reach out. Don't wait for them, because they may never come to you.
All right, Ed, thanks for that. Also, Daryl, thank you for your call. Let's go to Gregory now in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. Gregory, welcome to the hour.
Hey, good morning.
Hello.
I'd like to share my experience with law enforcement here in Bethel. A couple of decades ago, the local police department there was displaying some behavior there that was unbecoming of them. At that time there, I had a pistol, and to show my frustration, put my boat in the water and emptied out 6 rounds within city limits there, and I was yelling and hollering there for the local leaders there to get something done with these guys. And, you know, I went up to fish camp, slept it off, and came back into town, and I walked around there with my backpack with a pistol inside. And, you know.
So Gregory, are you saying that because of that incident, you felt afraid that you even had to arm yourself?
And nowadays, now that my rifles and a pistol have been confiscated, I'm down to a slingshot. And every time I try to get law enforcement to have people removed from my house, you know, they simply do not show up.
All right. Ed, I want to take this back to you. Your thoughts, you know, my thought was, you know, did this make him afraid that he had to carry a pistol? And you know, anytime we do have a run-in with the law enforcement, and maybe it's a negative one, you know, how does that affect the next time that we really need to connect? Go ahead, and anything you want to follow up with Gregory. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, that's where a lot of the problem is with law enforcement. Law enforcement officers are trained a certain way, particularly in the academy, and it's always, I hate to use this term, but us against them mentality. So what needs to happen there is a field training officer program. It's when the officer gets out of the academy. Then you start learning to relate with the communities. You start relating to. Now, this issue that was described, if the guy explained that he was just venting, he certainly wasn't putting anybody in any danger. He was making a lot of noise. He was out, you know, wherever he was in the water. And this should have been considered, even though there's a law that probably addresses that. And that's something that should have been considered. And that's where law enforcement, and it isn't just law enforcement. We're talking about a justice system that includes the courts, prosecution, and, you know, corrections. And all have to be educated. Now, I'm thinking about this within ending country, it would have been something probably that may have been considered. Certainly, we'd have to offer the guy some kind of behavior modification or some evaluation assessment just to be sure that we're being kept safe, because we also have to think about public safety. But issues like this, law enforcement must educate themselves with the help of mental health providers, social service agencies, everything that I believe Lemoyne talked about. So officers are better trained as all-around service providers, protecting the citizens, not just making arrests. And it does happen a lot. The majority of 18,000 law enforcement agencies throughout the United States, you know, are practicing community policing, but there's certainly a lot more to do.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Let's take another caller. We have Luis in Los Ranchos, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Welcome to the hour, Luis.
Howdy. Welcome. Gracias. appreciate the show. And I wanted to respond to what your guest speaker, Ed, was saying about the idea of tribal police reaching out to the outer communities outside their tribal lands. I want to relate an incident I saw. I go to a lot of the Pueblo dances because I like to be around peace-loving people. And last year at one of the Pueblos, I witnessed in a pretty crowded market, a shoplifter do that, and then a lot of police came to the area, the tribal police, and finally caught him there between some booths. And so I thought, being used to what I'm used to in the city, and I've traveled outside of this, of the U.S. and Africa and Central and South America, and seen how police react. So I was ready for something, but what I saw was really beautiful in that the police that subdued the guy sat him down in a chair, and then they proceeded to rub his back and calm him down and talk to him really gently for a good while until he calmed down, and I was just really impressed.
So you saw something positive come out of that. Luis, thank you for your call. And I got one more question. We are getting tight on time. Sorry about that, Luis. And again, if there's something more you'd like to say, please do send us an email. Send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com or send us a tweet and post on Facebook. Ed, I wanted to ask you a question. The Lakota People's Law Project put out a report, Native Lives Matter. It's a campaign that a lot of people are connecting to when they talk about tensions and also solutions. One of the things that their report states, if things are going to change, the police force needs to reflect its service population. In other words, you know, if there are Native populations, there need to be Native police. What do you think about that, Ed?
I strongly support that issue. That is something that needs to be, and it isn't enough just to educate any non-Indian officers that, you know, maybe, you know, like I said, we educate them on the culture and the laws, et cetera. But that Native perspective, particular people that come from the community, Native communities that they're about, would certainly help a lot. Because my experience is in working with some of the cities, an officer on the street can meet with another officer, you know, that can educate them while in the field. You know, if they, a Native officer and a non-Native approach a Native person, he may generally refer to the non-Native officer to handle that, which is appropriate. But certainly they still have to be educated. I mean, you know, a Native from back east doing policing in the Southwest may be a little different. But still, I strongly believe in that.
All right. Thanks, Ed. And Eileen, I want to go to you for any final comments, anything you want to wrap us up with, or actually anything you want to wrap us up with.
Sure. I think what Ed just talked about was the integration of Indians into law enforcement is a critical component. It's as critical as the community, Indian community being involved, is to have tribal members who are involved in policing and part of policing, because part of it is that tribal police need to be trained, mainstream police need to be trained, and if you train them all together, then they come to understand the issues that each face. My brother was a deputy sheriff, and he was partnered with a non-Indian in an area of San Diego County that was Native, and he was able to explain to the non-Native officer an awful lot. He was a training officer, an awful lot of what was going on, with an understanding of how it worked in communities. That explanation, that assertiveness into the police system, is something that needs to happen. And it's wonderful when it does, because we see so many problems where they're not resolved, where they're not understood, and part of it is just basically understanding what the issues are that each face.
All right. Thanks for that, Eileen. And Lamoine, anything you want to share with us?
Training needs to occur with not just the public safety sector, but also with the mental health and the community advocate sectors. They all have to have that same crisis intervention team training on de-escalation and communication simultaneously in partnership, not in separation. We need communication, just as one of the previous comments indicated around rapport, indicating that you're looking for trust and respect. You're actually increasing that trust and respect from your community by engaging them in dialogue, de-escalating the situations, so that you're diminishing the use of force and increasing the option of really creating careful dialogue, rapport with your the person that you're facing. You know, and that's often the best weapon there is rapport and dialogue.
We need more of it. We need to be trained by it. And that's the approach of crisis intervention team training. Put the public safety, community advocates, and mental health fields together. Train them. A tribe should really look at establishing standards on crisis intervention. Tribes and even state legislative people who represent tribes should be submitting legislation to their respective states asking for crisis intervention team laws so that everyone, native and non-native, are getting training in communication and de-escalation techniques. We'll save lives, many lives that way.
All right. Thanks, Lemoyne. And where do people connect with you?
Through the www.thebarbaraschneiderfoundation.org.
All right. Thanks for that, Lemoyne. We'll get a link up on our website. And that's going to go ahead and wrap it up for today's hour. Thank you to all the folks who shared, all of our callers, as well as our guests. On the line with us today was Eileen Luna Firebaugh, also Lemoyne LaPointe, and Ed Reyna. We appreciate your time and helping us, dialogue about this. And we continue to take a look at this throughout the year. Please do send your comments to us if there's something more you'd like to hear in a conversation when we talk about police, law enforcement, and Native America. Give us a call, or actually send us an email, one at comments@nativeamericacalling.com. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this week, too, but we will be back again on Monday with more great conversations. On Monday, we are going to focus on our muscles and building muscle. If you have this right in center of your priorities, you don't want to miss Monday. We want to hear from you. We also want good advice on how to build muscles. So send us an email right now, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Thanks to our crew, our senior producer, Monica Brain, our associate producer, Andy Murphy, our engineer, Stephen Emmons, and also thanks to Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood, wishing you a wonderful rest of your day.
February is Children's Dental Health Month. It's important to begin cleaning your baby's teeth as soon as they appear. And that means it's also time for your baby to visit the dentist. Cavities are 100% preventable, and you can help prevent them by brushing your kid's teeth daily and by limiting sugary snacks and sodas. Remember to call your dental clinic today to make an appointment for your child. This message brought to you by Native American Professional Parent Resources.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.